You're listening to Dose of Depth podcast. I'm your host, Deborah Lukovich, and I invite you to be curious about your unique experience of being human. In this podcast, we'll explore the deeper meaning of ordinary life experiences through conversation, stories, and education. You might have a serious aha moment, or you might just be amused by the movie your life seems to be imitating, or you might just be entertained by one of my awkward stories. I'm hoping you'll become more aware of those moments when a deeper part of you is prompting you to see things differently and maybe even go a new direction. So let's get started. In this episode, I have a chat with Jennifer Day, the founder of Life Shine Design. Jen is an emotional wellness coach, and her combination of background, life experiences, and formal training reflects her appreciation for the meandering nature of coming into deeper relationship with yourself, or inner being. In the language of depth psychology, Jen's approach to working with clients expresses honor for the mysterious feminine approach to the journey to self. The feminine, not meaning woman, rather a style of consciousness, an inner feminine, is meandering, not linear. Rather, she is patient and strategic as she sorts through the past, and she prompts or sometimes forces a fiery alchemical process of inner transformation. Eventually, the feminine will require the masculine partner, not meaning man, to bring form to the new creation, which could be a new insight or way of thinking and behaving, a new career, innovative idea, or artistic expression. I love Jen's use of creativity as she empowers her clients to come into deeper relationship with their inner being, and this changes the way they show up in the world. Jen doesn't box in creativity, calling it therapy or art or anything really. Jen allows creativity to pull her clients closer to themselves, and ultimately their creative expression returns to the world as either something new, private, and or a contribution to the collective, maybe as a new business. Jen and I have had a few chats, and there's always danger we'll go on and on and on. Definitely a mutual complex is happening there for sure, but it's a good one. So let's get started. Welcome, Jen. What's happening in your life that is exciting right now?
Hi. First, I'm so excited to be here and to be having this conversation with you. I love our chats, and we'll see where
me too
goes today. I'm super excited about being invited on a couple of podcasts, and I have been invited to be a coach for a creative program that we're doing, which is really going to tap into curiosity about self, which I am passionate about. And there's just things blowing up and bubbling everywhere. It's just so exciting. And really what I'm doing is focusing internally, and it's having all of these external consequences, quote unquote, you know, all these effects.
Absolutely. Like, you're just a walking alchemical vessel, and it's starting to erupt and unleash. And sometimes you're like, I don't even know, where is it going? How is it taking form? So it's a really exciting time. And also, like, a little like you feel like you have to catch up with yourself.
Yes. And it's so funny because so much of this is coming from through the process of surrender and trust, and just following where my body and my gut is telling me to go, which is in direct opposition to what most people would say. Like, to build a business, you need to do this and this and be reaching out and on and on. And really, I've been reaching out, but in ways that really are about me being vulnerable and surrendering to this process that I have to be seen, and I have to have the confidence to be seen and get really curious about what's going on in my life and why I'm doing what I'm doing and all of those things that we'll get into later. But it's fascinating. It's like watching a strange movie unfold.
Yes, I love it. And I love your vulnerability that you sort of infuse to what you're going to share today about how you help your clients. Because I think when people see vulnerability, I think it connects with them. And I think they feel like what you're saying and what you're sharing is really authentic. So let's dive in.
I know you've been on your own journey to the self, and I wonder if you've been able to identify where and how your soul had been working in the background, poking and prodding and inspiring you to go certain directions, and where you might have indulged yourself or where you may have resisted the prompting. And so let's just start by having you share your story, a little bit about your background, how you came to this place in your life where you're so hungry to explore what you've been exploring for the purpose of guiding others to come into deeper relationship with their inner being.
Well, I married my father. That was the first of the beginning of this lesson.
I love it.
Yeah. And a super charming fellow, but also one that was really emotionally risky. And so it wasn't an emotionally safe relationship for me, and repeated a lot of patterns that I had grown up with. And what I realized when I had my own kids and I was raising them in this environment, I just kept looking around like, this pattern has to stop. So we talk about generational healing, right? I was literally like, I cannot pass on to my kids the way I am feeling right now in this relationship. And so when I separated from him, it was terrifying. And it was really isolating. I absolutely withdrew from everyone. And I feel like I kind of got tumbled through the ocean and I popped up on another continent where I didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. And I was very self-focused because I had to heal myself, because all of a sudden I had to redefine who I am and how I want my relationships to be and what I'm asking for and what I need and all of these questions, which is work that frankly, I really didn't want to do. So there's the resistance. I was like, no, I was supposed to just pop out on the other side and be happy all of a sudden. And that's, I think, the part of divorce that's not spoken about so much, is that there is it's like our midlife unraveling that you mm-hmm. speak about. It is needing to be really curious about what's happening inside, because that curiosity hyperspeeds growth. And we can't go through something as transformational as divorce and redefining your future and redefining your life, or the life of your kids, you know, allowing for the death of all of those hopes and dreams you mm-hmm. had for that relationship, without getting curious about how are you going to do it different next time? Or you're going to repeat all those same patterns. And I knew that repeating was not an option for me. So that's really what spurred this change for myself. And while I was watching my kids go through that, and just during their growth and just watching their own individual struggles separate from the family dynamics, I taught for 27 years and I worked in elementary through eighth grade. And I started seeing so many basic needs being unmet in these kids. And I include myself as one of these parents who decided that our kids were able to feel emotions that I was not able to feel when I was a kid. But I think I did that very irresponsibly, if you will, because I didn't know how to contain my own emotions. And I was trying to help my kids navigate this. And through therapists and all these different people, they kept saying, well, you have to stay emotionally regulated. My first question was, what does that mean? Emotional regulation. Second of all, my question was, how do I do that? I don't even know how do I do that in the face of, you know, an explosive anger or anything, because it triggered so much in me. And so I realized that I couldn't help my kids deal with their emotions until I was able to handle my own emotions.
Absolutely. And also, those emotions that got triggered actually need to be expressed before you can regulate. So regulation is not your first task.
Right. And so this word curiosity is going to come up a lot, because I had to get really curious about what was going on in me when those emotions were happening. And then I had to sit with those emotions in order to sort of process them, to feel them, and to recognize I mean, wounds, I suppose you could say, about when I had experienced those earlier in life, and then come to an understanding. And really what it led me to was just always having curiosity within myself, because that is my most important relationship. It's the one I have throughout my whole life. It's the only one that will understand all of my ups and downs. Nobody else can really truly understand me the way I can. And so I really started focusing on me, and by withdrawing into me, I think that was the withdrawal from the world, right? I had to withdraw into me, and mm-hmm. I got super clear, super fast on what I was looking for and what I needed. And life just started changing super fast, which was both alarming and exciting. Sometimes the transformations mm-hmm. are really big and quick and fast and life altering. You know, all of a sudden I'm here in Arkansas. What is that? I was never planning on leaving Colorado. And I love it. And sometimes the transformations are really slow and need to be more mindful. And I'm the biggest thing that's come out of that beginning, if you will, is that my relationship to self and to me is the source of all of my relationships with others. And that sourcing can be positive or negative. And it's my responsibility to take care of my own crap, that I don't spread that crap in my relationships. And that was a big mm-hmm. part of my marriage too, being triggered all over the place, and my first marriage. And so I just have such a different appreciation for all of this work than I did before. My goal through my work now is to help parents understand themselves better so that we can model how to do that for our kids. So we can help kids understand how to move through emotions. And so those big emotions won't end up with kindergartners throwing tables across classrooms. You know, there's expression of these really volatile cries for help all over the place, and they're misunderstood. We slap them, you know, we slap them on the hand, we give them a consequence, et cetera, when really what we need to be doing is showing compassion.
Yes.
And using it as a learning opportunity.
Yeah, we could have a whole other conversation about the experience watching my children go through elementary and high school education in wealthy school districts. I was horrified at the concepts. We could have another conversation about that, but thank you for sharing. My listeners are going to love this, because one of the things I really appreciate about you is that you just talk in regular language. You know, let's get rid of the terms and the concepts, which actually is a great segue to the second question, because one of the things that we chatted about was this tendency for concepts to emerge that initially feel so powerful. Like they really capture your attention, like, oh, something new for me to try, a new approach to healing. But the concepts stay concepts, which means they stay in the mind. So for example, you point to a couple of your favorite buzzwords and concepts like reparenting and living authentically. And you ask a great question, what the heck do they mean? And a better question, which is, how the heck do they relate to my life? Like, what do they have to do with me, my soul and my body, not just staying in my mind? So, and you point to the problem that these concepts, these terms, these methods and modalities become dominated and controlled by the ego, which we know is defensive in nature. The ego seeks only to affirm and confirm what it already knows. So the new concept in my mind will come and go and lose its meaningful significance. So I know you're passionate about this, so you just go where you want with that.
Being a teacher and spending so many meetings and so much teacher learning opportunities to try to understand how we could serve our students better, I became really disenchanted with the buzzwords that, you know, every year there was a different buzzword for what we needed to be doing in education. And these were often written by people who were not in the trenches in education. And so I think I'm particularly doubtful of words like this, because I think they really can be appropriated, if you will, by the culture. And it's like spiritual bypassing, if you will. Like, oh, we all just need to meditate. Well, what does that even mean? Most people are like, oh, you have to sit down and be quiet and your mind has to be still. Mm-hmm. No, meditation is the opportunity to watch what's happening within yourself and to deepen that understanding of what's happening in self. And so quiet, you know, if we're an enlightened master, perhaps that's where we'll get. But in the meantime, we have a lot of stuff we have to unair. Our laundry baskets are jam packed with stuff that need to be aired out. Right. So, when I do think about reparenting and just all of these buzzwords, it frustrates me because I think people can say, oh, well, I do meditate, or I go to yoga and meditation's really great, or I do yoga at home. And this is where I think it's so much more meaningful and deeper when it's in connection with someone. The greatest example of this that I can offer perhaps is for anybody who's been to a yoga class. At the end of it, you have Shavasana. Well, if you do yoga by yourself, you will notice that Shavasana does not feel the same at home in your living room as it does in a yoga studio.
Mm-hmm, my favorite.
And that's because they're in the yoga studio, your yoga teacher. I'm a yoga teacher certified. The purpose of Shavasana is that you are laying down and there is someone who is intentionally on guard for you. And so your central nervous system can completely let go that there is a guard. And it's like, you know, we used to have guards when people were out coming across the land in the wagons and things. There were night guards, right? There were people who were supposed to ensure our safety. If someone is standing guard for us, our central nervous system relaxes in a way that it doesn't when it's on its own. And so if we can take that and kind of extrapolate that idea into doing our own work by ourselves, we are only using the tools that we know and understand. So that's where coaching comes in, or therapy, or any kind of work with another human being that maybe has done some extra work in mm-hmm. these areas. Although there is benefit to speaking with just a friend. I don't mean just a friend, quote unquote. Like, mm-hmm. you know, just having a conversation. But if you have an interaction and a connection with someone who understands this a little bit better or a little bit differently, then there's some
mm-hmm. right.
interesting information that can birth perhaps some curiosity. And that's where the growth comes from. You know, our relationships to self, any relationship will die without curiosity. Curiosity is what allows us to want to know why someone behaves in a certain way, as opposed to just being irritated that they do it and just want them to stop. And I think so many of relationships, you know, we're all concerned with the divorce rate. Well, if we're all growing, if we're all curious and we're all growing and we're communicating about that and we're tending our relationship to ourself, which then extends into our relationship with our partner, I bet that divorce rate would go down.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't, I love a lot of what you said already. I didn't realize that or think about Shavasana in a class that way. But early on, I have a whole other interview with Julie Montemurlo about my sneaky psyche sort of calling me to yoga. And early on, I had this experience in Shavasana where I couldn't feel my body and I felt like nothing and everything at the same time. It was very powerful, but I hadn't thought that perhaps the reason I was able to feel that and get to that state was the fact that I was in a class, because I have a very, very strong, you know, defensive mind. So I love it. And then the other thing it reminds me of is that we grow through relating.
Yes.
Whether it's relating with a tree or relating with a person or relating with a pet. And, you know, we are talking about how there's four different communication channels between two people. There are egos talking to each other where we think, I think I know what you mean. I think I know why I'm saying what I'm saying, but you are also talking to my conscious talking to your unconscious. And then the playground is where our unconscious is talking to each other. So there is, like, between us, there's this space. we're the another image where we are working together. And, you know, Carl Jung believed that, you know, and one of the reasons he thought all therapists should like go through analysis is that he believed that if the therapist is not part of the equation, if the therapist isn't being impacted by providing therapy to the other, it's not really complete. It's not really complete therapy. So I love it. Thank you. So onto creativity. Creativity has become a very powerful part of my practice, but I had to get over the awkwardness and power of my artist complex. My two sisters are legitimate artists, even that, you know, labeling that as a problem, I understand, but they are, and feeling outshined by them during childhood sent my creative instinct underground. It would show itself from time to time. And I remember laughing when I declared to people, I was a financial planner, that I'm creative with a calculator, or I had to be an entrepreneur so I could do my own thing. That's how my creativity was expressed. And then later I began to realize that my love for gardening, really it was an obsession, was another way my creative urge was desperate to make itself known. But it wasn't until my midlife unraveling when I met my inner child and that all changed. So the first time I allowed my unconscious to express itself in a drawing felt like I was in kindergarten, which is maybe the point. And I didn't know what to draw. This caused intense anxiety, not even knowing what to draw. So one night I was in my favorite bar where the artist was also, the owner was an artist too. So we would draw together. And I was like in a trance and I'm drinking a glass of wine. And I started drawing lines from the center of the page to the edge. And I must have drawn like over 100 lines. And after I filled the page, I stepped back and I took another sip of wine. And I was like, oh my gosh, my eyes widened. And I felt like this heaviness in my chest. And I knew my cheeks turned red. And when I looked at the blank space that I left in the center of the page, it was the shape of a heart. And I was like, coincidence? No, I was already studying depth psychology. So I knew it was a synchronicity. So I colored it in with intensity. I outlined the heart and I was like, I remember I was pressing so hard on the crayons and I was crying, like I cried. And I knew that in that vulnerable moment, I had met my inner child. I didn't even know like I needed to meet her. She was six. I know the year before I began to be bullied at school. I don't remember ever telling a teacher or my parents, and I felt so alone and unprotected during this emotional torture and threats of violence also to my body. So the raw experience of allowing this drawing to emerge, right? Like I didn't control it. I just like it came out, had unleashed this forgotten and scared child part of me. And she was able to break through all my protective layers because I didn't know I was going into the unknown, and she guided me through the drawing of the image. Now, I might not have found her if I hadn't allowed myself to draw like a child, and then acknowledging her and then beginning to provide her with what I hadn't received as a child, like completely changed my life. I then went on to like skip down the sidewalk and do cartwheels. And to this day, I still do cartwheels and felt things that I probably wouldn't have been able to feel, and also unleashed this other form expressions of my creative urge. Now, I happened upon this experience kind of accidentally, and also because I was studying to be a depth psychologist. So what I love about you and your coaching is that you have this framework that you offer to clients so that they can experience this, and you teach them how to embrace an intentional creative practice. So I love that too, because it's not, those aren't concepts. They're just regular words that people can really relate to. And I think, and I know that they can achieve insights in a way that they won't through regular talk therapy, and also the body, which we're not really going to talk about today. So I wanted to share that to sort of set up your sharing the six components, I'll call them components of the framework, because yes, they're kind of steps, but I imagine that you might go back like to the first step and then go to the third and fourth. And then, oops, I got to go back because I identified another limiting belief or whatever, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. So step one is about bringing to the surface and putting onto canvas this self-doubt and inner criticisms and things like that. And then two is about acknowledging those, but then finding the other, the light side, the opposite, the positive associations. And you talk about how this can be words or you know, textures or even movement. So take us on a journey of walking through and correcting anything I said, and then also sort of walking through these first steps. And if you want to work in like your experience or clients' experiences and generally, just to give our listeners, you know, an idea of what this feels like to experience.
Well, first, I think I just want to clarify, there's another buzzword and it's spirituality. And I think that's a very misunderstood concept. The Oxford Dictionary mm-hmm. defines spirituality as the quality of being concerned with the human spirit or soul, as opposed to material or physical things. And the yes. way spirituality mm-hmm. comes into the life coaching that I do is that we are focusing inward in life coaching, right? I focus on myself, you know, my clients focus on themselves. So that sounds really basic, but actually I think it's super important if we consider that we need to really focus on our relationships with self in order to deepen our connection with others. And that connection is so important, and it leads to a feeling of fulfillment. It can lead to a feeling of a valued life, or an empty life, or dissatisfaction, or frustration within relationships, et cetera, et cetera. It just goes on. And we can see, particularly after COVID and that isolation, that a lot of the connections we had before COVID are not serving the same purpose now. We have evolved and changed in that experience. So the purpose of my program is to get curious about the self. And so some would call that spiritual. My mom just did yesterday. And she was like, oh, that's pretty woo. And I'm like, it's not actually woo at all, in fact. But it is an entirely different focus than our parents had in their life. They didn't have space for that. Their parents grew up in the Depression or just after that. You know, it just, that was not the focus. These words were not used. So the reason that I focus on curiosity is because we are building compassion for ourselves. And when we grow in forgiveness and within self-compassion, we can actually feel compassion for others. But if we are not kind to ourselves for making mistakes, how can we forgive others for making mistakes? If we are angry or ashamed over our own choices, then we need to turn that around and try to figure, well, why did we make those choices? What were we looking for? What were we trying to accomplish? And understand those choices that we made so that we can make different choices in the future and not give ourselves reason to feel the anger and frustration. So step one is really dependent, in a very simple user-friendly explanation. Step one is, what is the problem that you're dealing with at the moment? What is the theme of the issue? So if we take just basic understanding of this feeling that I'm having inside that I don't really know what it is, well, we just start journaling on a canvas or on a piece of paper, just words. It's not even a journal, because I think writing in a journal for me is really frustrating. My mind moves so much faster than my hand can move. And so I find that I'm really unable to put down on paper exactly what I'm feeling. And more than that, there's always this fear that someone's going to read it and then I'll be exposed, you know, that exposure piece. So I put it on a canvas or I put it on a piece of paper. What would these words be? Let's say I have imposter syndrome. I don't believe in myself. Criticism, anger, maybe we walk into the inner critic a little bit. Limiting beliefs is huge for this. I can't, I shouldn't. Why do I think I can do this? What do I have to offer other people? I'm just me. So the word just. And then that next step is, okay, well, what if we could change some of those? What if we looked at ourselves with compassion? And instead of saying, well, what do I have to offer people? I'm just me. What if you could say, well, I'm not a professional artist, but I still have something to offer. So just and still, I still have something to offer is great. Also, ending those negative statements with the word yet. Through this, the goal is to come to a more unconditional understanding of ourselves, an unconditional love. And I don't think we can get to unconditional love without loving ourselves through our darkest times and our darkest choices. And so this is a time where you can have a conversation with yourself about those dark choices, right? Shame, disappointment, embarrassment, just those icky, awful, horrible, body shocking emotions. You can write that down on a canvas and then you turn around and say, well, I wouldn't do that again. Or, you know, any words that you can come up with that theme that offers, that allows you to seek why, to come to an understanding about why those choices were made and just take the judgment out.
And I would also say that putting it onto the canvas is a way of having some separation with it. So rather than drowning in those feelings, you're able to articulate as best you can, whether it's words or symbols or images or whatever, and you're putting it over here. So then you're like, oh, I can kind of look at that as if it's not even really me. It's like part of me, of course, but I'm putting it over here. So now I can have a kind of dialogue with it. So I really love how you described, instead of like, this is what we do, the meaning of the first two steps. Thank you. So number three is, I think these are probably my words, but like pulling things into the future now. So you mentioned, well, I might not do that again, but, or here's what I would do instead. But, and this could be come in the form of affirmations. People are sort of familiar with affirmations. And again, what does that mean? So like, for example, it's so cool now that I am, or now that I can do, or I'm enjoying life so much now because this is happening. And then number four, finding the images and symbols that bring that to life. And what I love about that is that people don't understand the difference between sign and symbol. So a sign, we know the meaning. A symbol is like, like I'm attracted to this, but I don't exactly know why, because it can't be articulated yet. And I love that. So like, I'm drawn to the symbol. I'm going to put that on my canvas now on top of these other things. So you have this progression. And what I might know is more how I want to feel, or how I'm going to feel, as opposed to how exactly that's going to manifest. So again, talk a little bit more about, you know, these two steps. And that I love how you call these pieces, they're living pieces. They're living, you could call it whatever you want. It can be a journal, it can be an image, you know, and a kind of a progression, a history, a story, a metaphor, whatever it is. So I love that you say that they're living, they're evolving, they change, they don't ever have to be complete. So yeah, so step three and four.
I want to riff for a minute on what you said at the beginning, where you get to be, there's a separation. I'm a certified mm-hmm. adult chair coach, Michelle Chalfont's the adult chair. And in a nutshell, our beings, if you will, every one of us pops back and forth between these three chairs, the child chair, the adolescent chair, and the adult chair. The child chair is where all of our emotions come from: happiness, sad, safety, curiosity, exploration, excitement, things like that. Our adolescent chair is where the ego lives. And that's also where rage comes from, and despair and depression and anxiety, these bigger, more complex, and frankly, negatively impacting emotions. The ego is constantly, as I'm sure you well know, it's constantly scanning for what it knows and recognizes to be true. And so it's looking for patterns that can trigger us into a reaction. It, from my perspective, what I'm blending into my art practice is this idea of being in your adult chair, which is literally being witness. So let's witness this emotion that you're feeling. If you're embarrassed, shameful, what have you, if you're working on a particular experience, and write down all of the, so the heavy emotions, the ones we're trying to work through. And then you cover that up with, well, what could you have done? What would you like to do? Or the yet also mm-hmm. next time, these things. And then this affirmation piece is more of like, I am growing. It's the progressive, the ing words, right? I am learning. I am becoming. I am loving myself through this, or any of those things. This is after we seek to understand why we've done it, whatever it is, why we're feeling what we're feeling or what have you, then how are we going to put this into practice? How can we behave in the future in a different way, just to be more kind to ourselves or more kind out in the world in our other relationships? So step three can actually just be a part of two, right? And the idea that any of this work is actually finished puts an end to curiosity, right? And that really should never happen. And so I do have living canvases. They are, every layer is a different thing, and I can come up to positive affirmations and use symbols. I have a canvas behind me right now that your clients can't see, but we can put up a picture of it if we like. It's totally a living canvas. There are so many layers underneath here. What's currently visible is I personally am working with intimacy, which ultimately is trust. And so I drew a heart, and it's hysterical because I have never liked heart images or hearts on jewelry, or I don't know why. I was like, that's so juvenile. I don't know what my judgment in my head was. So I've been kind of exploring with hearts. And so this heart behind me, it was supposed to be something else, which is always fascinating when what actually comes out is 100% different than what you were imagining. It was supposed to be like a portal, and now it's a heart. And this heart has enormous wings, so it can just lift off and fly because it's light enough. I also, when I taught for 27 years, I taught Spanish. And one of the greatest gifts I've ever received is being able to travel and really study into ancient cultures. And I love the symbology of hieroglyphs and totems. And the Mesoamerican peoples are just farther south Native Americans, right? So this is all related. And I'm also a feng shui practitioner, so I've studied a lot of those symbols also. And so for me, and for the belief systems of a lot of these ancient cultures, birds represent communication with the gods or the heavens, or however you want to say that, whether that be one god or many. This image behind me, I sort of painted it and then sat there and was like, what is that? And it's literally to lighten my heart and to allow for some of this trust and let my balloon fly, you know, let it go up and out and expand mm-hmm. and be seen. And so that was pretty remarkable because I had no idea what was coming out. And then down at the bottom, I'm not sure anybody can read it, and that's not even important, but the lines that are going up that are the stems of flowers, if you will, they are actually the affirmations that I was putting into this painting. There's a key on the painting. Trusting and being intimate with myself allows me to trust and be intimate with others. That is the key, right? So that was a very literal symbol that I pulled out. I use a lot of mm-hmm. symbology in my paintings. And sometimes that's the start. Sometimes, you know, I did a session with a client the other day, and she said, you know, I really don't have anything I really want to work on. But the craziest thing happened to me the other day. I was sitting in my yard, and there was an owl that just sat there in the tree and was talking to me for, you know, a period of time. So we explored owl, and what is the meaning of owl? And so that was fascinating because it really related. She was able to pull that back into so many of the other things that are going on in her life. Sort of the synchronicity of that conversation was beautiful.
Well, and you know what I love about that is that really was her unconscious, herself, like she wanted to stay in the mind. And it was a gift that she didn't know. Because we think we, even when we know what we want to talk about it, we think that's what the ego wants to talk about, really. And we really want to invite the self forward. So that's a perfect example of Jung's, you know, how he looks at synchronicity is, boom, there it was. The owl came in and was able to lead her where the self really wanted her to go. So I love that.
Synchronicities and being aware of those. And just being willing and curious enough to explore things like that and symbols is where the intimacy within your own self can come from, which is another, there is synchronicity in spirituality. And it's not necessarily that you're always like, oh, it's 11:11, make a wish, or 1:11, or 2:22, or, you know, there is deeper work to be done.
So, I mean, it's like, but there is a reason that you notice what you notice. So you don't go looking for 1111. No. But if you notice, and I actually went through this recently over a couple of months, and I don't know anything about numerology. And I was like, every time I looked at my car, it was 1111 or 444 microwave 1111. So then I looked it up. So then I was like, oh, so a synchronicity really is just the collision between something in the inner world and it's using something in the external world. And then there's some meaning, but if there's no meaning for you, then it's not really a synchronicity.
Right. And so we have to be willing to follow that trail. Like, oh, yes. Grab that balloon string, if you will, and be carried away to yes. meaning. That's yes. that curiosity piece that is that fuel that we can also see on the canvas because our mind is not in control.
So the final two steps have to do with exploring, and maybe you've actually started kind of explaining this, but exploring associations that you have, which you've done sort of like the heart. I really didn't like hearts before. And now this is like what this is how I'm finding meaning in these images. And then I guess number six, which we haven't really talked about is, number six is really like, what does this mean for my life? Like, what is, I have a kind of aha about the meaning, but what do I think now needs to happen in my life? Or what's the natural extension of that aha and insight that leads to this next version of me, how I'm unfolding as a different person? And often that connects with a new sense of purpose about contributing to the collective.
Yes. So to get back to the adult chair, when we are in our adult chair, we are witnessing ourselves constantly bounce back between the child and the adolescent. And in that way, we are given the opportunity to disrupt your word, to disrupt those patterns of the ego, right? So randomly, I found this heart and it disrupted me enough that I was curious to kind of ponder that a little bit. And now I have this painting of a heart. Mind you, these living canvases, they don't ever have to be finished. They can be. They don't ever have to go up on your living room wall. That is not the goal. If you happen to create something that you are happy enough with that you would like to sell it or hang it up on your wall, awesome. That's not the purpose of this art, right? So in this way, I lingered on the concept of this heart and the wings and the things that came out on this. And it allowed me to really get curious about how hearts and love and this block I had against them, how that translates into my day-to-day life. And I realized, you know, it's if I'm showing my heart out to the world, am I safe? Is really what it kind of comes down to. And being able to be truthful with myself about that this vulnerability has to constantly be worked on in my body. And this is me, but understanding that so that I can continually have this conversation with myself about who I am, what I need, and why I do what I do, allows me to notice those patterns when I'm sitting in my adult chair and I'm watching like, oh, I just got defensive right there and I reacted instead of responded. And when we are curious about someone else, we respond. And if we are trying to focus on connection with someone else, we're curious. Like, wow, what I just said really affected you. I'm sorry that that disturbed you. What happened? That's curiosity. And that's about deepening the intimacy within your partnership, whether or not that's with your kid, right? Or your student in your classroom or your partner in life. Anytime there's a big reaction in someone, we should get curious. Instead, we're like, oh, your response was not, it was not appropriate. So we're going to slap a consequence on you, or we're going to, you know, turn you this way or send you into the corner or shut you down and just walk away and dismiss you, which leaves that person feeling unseen, misunderstood, unlovable, unloved. It's all of those invalidating emotions pop up.
And also, who gets to decide it's inappropriate? Right. Like, we often see other people's experiences through our own limiting lens. So I like the I like the metaphor of the chairs, because again, you're able to detach, it's not detach. It's like, put it over here so I can see it. Yeah. These are different parts of me. Instead of drowning in the argument in your body and in your mind, you're like, oh, these are different things playing out. And also, we have to be careful about the ego, because the ego is our friend as well. So the ego is what allows us to sort of manage this tension between what comes up in our unconscious and our instincts, and sort of this, how do we exist in the world? And we need to rebel against conventional concepts that have gone stagnant. And how do we do that? Well, things come up from the unconscious, but then we need the ego then to say, okay, let me work with this. And so your ego is a partner in bringing those things out onto the canvas. So I feel like sometimes people now, they have demonized the ego, and it's just that the ego has to be fluid. It has to be fluid. It has to know like when, and sometimes we have to talk to the ego and say, I'm trying something new. Give me a little space. Mm-hmm. And the chair, I love the chair. And I also love ing words. And really quickly, why I like ing words is that people talk a lot about visualizing, but I think for most people, they can't get to visualizing. And so ing is a bridge. So yeah. Ing is like, well, I'm growing, because it's too hard for some people to walk around and lie to themselves and say, hey, I got $1 million now, or I'm feeling abundant, or I'm feeling whatever. But they could say, I'm working on feeling more abundant, and that's doable for them. So I really, really love ing words. I haven't heard anybody say that before.
Or inviting abundance.
Or I'm inviting, I'm asking, yeah, exactly. So I like it because it's action oriented, and it's like this bridge. It's the bridge between, yeah, I like it a lot. Oh my gosh. Why I'm hesitating is I feel like we could have another whole podcast episode about Generation Z, but maybe just quickly say, and I'm going to tell my listeners, I wrote a blog post and I read this on another episode about what is Gen Z mirroring back to us. So there's a lot to say about it. And I'll just really quickly sum it up by saying every new generation is sort of belittled by the older generations because they get stuck in their ways, but never more so than what's happening right now, because there are a lot of really systems that are being dismantled, and they should be dismantled, but it's really terrifying. So that's why some are clinging more to rigid belief systems, because they're terrified of the unknown and what's going to replace capitalism or whatever it is. This generation, they're done. They're done. They're not going to play. They don't want to play, but they're being belittled for not playing. They're called entitled. They're called whatever it is. And it's like how you absorb that. And I almost feel like these, you know, high rates of anxiety and depression and paralysis and lack of focus and motivation, those are just labels, by the way, that have negative baggage, is almost an invitation for everyone to come into their world and to stop and to linger in the unknown. And that's what anxiety is. It's sort of like, I don't know what's going to happen next. But it is Generation Z who is going to have to figure out something new and something new to be unleashed And they're not, they don't know that, which is probably why, but they're being used, I think, as a vessel by the collective unconscious for something new to emerge through them. I see this is where creativity comes in. They can't use their mind, right? They have to be open. And it's through this sort of like drawing like a child and allowing and being a vessel and being a bridge for what wants to come out of the unknown to flow through them. And so I feel like we have to linger with them and we need to witness and we need to support them as they sit in this anxiety and as they can sort of surrender and accept it, something new, I think, will sort of probably unleash possibly very dramatically from them. So sort of what is your thought about that? Because both you and I have Gen Z, young adult kids, and I see specifically young adult men as particular. I mean, my daughter also struggles with anxiety and my son struggles with like this, I don't feel motivated, but that's not it, mom. He'll say it's not that, but you know, so he actually has a little bit of a language to play with it. But anyway, so just a couple quick thoughts on that because we're almost out of time.
I love everything that you just said about the place we find our youth in. And to kind of go back to what I said originally about teaching is I saw just dysfunction within the classroom left and right. And kids, for the purpose of education and moving forward in our textbooks, we were not taking care of the whole child. What I have discovered in working with my own kids through their moments of depression and anxiety, as well as myself through some of that stuff, and a lot of my studies and all of my curiosity that I'm pouring into just learning so many things, is that the difference between what we used to do and what we're doing now, we used to kind of ignore this connection and conversation, inner dialogue with ourselves to just go to work and go to the grocery store and go home and do the workout and then go to sleep and get up and do it again. Whereas now we kind of noticed that during COVID, we started this more consistent conversation with our inner self. And I believe the purpose of that conversation, where whether if it's on a canvas, is it in journaling, is it in gardening, is it taking quiet moments to be by yourself and to listen to what's happening and to have this conversation, it allows us to work on the issues rather and get to their source rather than managing the symptoms. And it feels like what we've been doing for so long is managing symptoms, you know, and our generation feels like we were just supposed to be seen and not heard. So we realized that we were not being heard. We didn't have that room to have those conversations and to really explore that. And our youth these days are demanding that of us. And from that more healthy relationship with self, if we can learn to do it and get rid of the old so that we have space for the new, we can teach our kids to do it. And this is where our collective growth is going to come from.
Yes. And I think they're the ones we're supposed to learn from, in that I think they're calling us to stop. Stop moving, stop being manic, come in here with me and linger in the anxiety that is a normal part of jumping forward in human evolution. So we're going to talk more about this and you're going to be on my new YouTube show called Drinks and Dreams. Anyway, so Jen, this has been so amazing. Tell my listeners where they can find you, follow you, how to learn about your coaching services. And that'll include all of that in the description box too.
Perfect. They can find me at Lifeshine Design on Facebook and Lifeshine Design Coach on Instagram. I'm also at my website, lifeshinedesign.com. And I am offering one-on-one coaching. I really am focusing more on the self-discovery club, which is like a 3-month journey with me where we really commit to some goals and do some deep work and there's homework and the rest of it. And then I have a waiting list of people who are wanting to come in and do some like monthly themed work with a canvas or a journal page to do this multi-step process. I'm developing a Teachable account where they can go on and take some of these classes without having to do a subscription. It's a one-time payment, what have you. So lots of things are coming up. So keep watch on lifeshinedesign.com. I have a free 5-page kind of self-exploration journal prompt on there, which can help people sort of get started on some of these thoughts. So they can just go to Lifeshine Design and print that out or download it. And so many fun things.
Wonderful. They're going to love your energy. Thank you so much, Jen, for being my guest and helping my listeners explore a topic that is awkward, allowing yourself to create, like a child, something that is required to come into deeper relationship with yourself. Thank you.
It's been my deepest pleasure. Thanks, Deborah.
I'm your host, Deborah Lukovich, and you are listening to Dose of Depth podcast. To get updates on new episodes, my writing, and how I teach my clients to get to know that deeper part of themselves, go to DeborahLukovich.com. Oh, and if you're not ready for a coach, learn what my clients know in my book, Your Soul is Talking. Are you listening? 5 Steps to Uncovering Your Hidden Purpose. You can check it out on my website or get it on Amazon.